During the months of September and October, we are highlighting the work of Hiking My Feelings in our community effort to showcase organizations who are working towards social justice, environmental action, and more inclusive public lands.
Founded in 2018 as a way to address personal trauma, Hiking My Feelings has been on a mission to improve community health by creating opportunities for people to experience the healing power of nature. Their programs and events cultivate a judgment-free space where transformational healing is possible. They introduce people to mindfulness and the healing power of nature, and the results are lasting improvements to mental, physical, and spiritual health.
With a variety of events, programs, and retreats, Hiking My Feelings is more than learning how to set up a tent. It is wilderness wellness. Through guided self-discovery exercises, in-the-field education, physical movement, and storytelling, they help to heal and transform our relationship to self, so that we can show up more powerfully in our communities.
Through advocating for outdoor exposure and a deeper connection to nature through mindfulness, Hiking My Feelings is working to help multitudes through their mission. Make monthly charitable giving a trend in your life in 2024 and help support Hiking My Feelings this September and October. Visit the link in our Instagram bio for more information. This episode of Gaze at the National Parks, the podcast, is sponsored by Moon Travel Guides. Moon Travel is the travel guidebook publisher for ethical travel. Don't spend months trying to build the perfect trip when you can do it all with Moon. Whether you are taking a short trip, exploring a European city, heading to a national park, or traveling to South America, Asia, or beyond, make sure to pack a Moon Travel Guide with you. Hello, and welcome to Trail Mix by Gaze at the National Parks, the podcast. I'm Dusty.
And I'm Mike. While our long format episodes explore one hiking trail and one national park, one park at a time, Trail Mix is the short format episode of our show. It's where we get to explore topics we didn't get to cover in our long format episodes, including history, science, environmental justice, and also interviews.
Today's Trail Mix is a very special interview with Maya Silver, the author of Moon, Best of Zion and Bryce, Moon, Utah, Moon, Zion and Bryce, and Moon, Salt Lake, Park City, and the Wasatch Range.
Based in Utah, Maya has an excellent attitude about exploring the state in that there is a lot to get to, so why not do it all?
A self-described Jane of all trades and master of none, Maya's unique perspective of the outdoors spans beyond just hiking and camping, as she also rock and ice climbs, skis, and mountain bikes. Her hobbies and interests definitely inform her writing and how she is able to juggle the many activities of the state through all the different seasons.
Along with her expansive collection for Moon Travel, Maya has also written for NPR, Travel and Leisure, Food 52, and a number of other publications.
We were beyond thrilled to have the opportunity to sit down and chat with Maya about her incredible depth of knowledge about the state of Utah, and we definitely got some great ideas for our next visit. As we have often joked on the show, Utah's unofficial slogan is, Utah, who knew? And the answer is Maya Silver.
We are so grateful and so excited to have Maya Silver here, who is a Moon Travel Guide author. She has written the Zion and Bryce book, which also includes some information about some other national park sites within Utah. I think when we were presented with this as a possibility, the both of us were so excited because the Utah parks are some of our favorite parks. I would imagine they are for you as well. We, I think, have some of the fondest experiences in those spaces. It was a real joy to be like, oh yeah, we get to interview Maya, because this is going to be like just like a bunch of fun, because it's all spaces that we love so much and are excited to talk more about. I guess my first question should be, are you based in Utah? Is that where you live?
Yeah, I live just outside Park City in a town called Camas, which is also known as the gateway to the Uinta Mountains, another beautiful outdoor area if you're ever in the Park City area. I'm not from Utah. I'm originally from DC. Got the outdoor mountain life bug on summer family road trips with my family. You know, we didn't always come to Utah or the West necessarily, but Utah was definitely one of the places we visited. After college, I was like, I gotta go West. Gotta get out of the city. Worked at a dude ranch in Colorado for a while. Picked up a lot of outdoor sports there. And then after spending like close to a decade in Colorado, moved to Utah for grad school and have stayed here. But even when I was in Colorado, I would, every like fall and spring, would come out to Utah to go to the desert and rock climb or mountain bike, whether it was a national park or wilderness area or BLM land. So have a long love for Utah.
I'm curious about your growing up in D.C. and if growing up in D.C. sort of helped to foster a relationship, a connection with the national parks, because obviously there's the National Mall, there's all the monuments, there's all these things happening in D.C., there's Shenandoah nearby. Did that start your relationship with national parks, or did that kind of come later when you started to head west?
You know, I never thought about that. I don't know. I mean, I definitely went down to the National Mall a lot as a kid. We went to like the cultural festivals there, saw the July 4th fireworks there. Big fan of Smithsonian, especially like during college when I'd come home for summers. I was like, why did I resent this as a kid? This is amazing. We just like go to museums, you know, go to the Air and Space Museum. So maybe something about like the shared public resources, whether it's land or cultural, was imbued in me. I would say it was probably more like coming out of the city and realizing how beautiful our country is. Like, not that DC is not beautiful. I can't say I'm a big city person anymore, but just like, oh my God, how can I be living in like this concrete jungle when there's mountains and rivers and desert landscapes? So yeah, a mix of all those things probably influenced me.
I mean, there's something very alluring about the desert. So I totally understand. We just were hiking in Saguaro, and we were in Carlsbad and Guadalupe Mountains, and we had done Big Bend last year. And it's like, I was so excited to get back into those spaces because there is something like, you know, we're both in New Jersey, so we're used to the land of green trees, and we're also used to very dense population. It's something that we talked about a lot with our friend Becky, just like how the population density, like it's, we're so used to it here, so that when we're in a very open space where you're miles between things and there aren't as many people around, it's not off-putting, but it's just like, it's a little jarring to the senses at first. And then you kind of like just get used to it. So I'd imagine like just the wide open spaces out there are also an incredible draw. There are so many things that we haven't done in Utah yet that I'm excited to get back for. The landscapes are so iconic and beautiful and so different from anywhere in the West.
Totally. I'm definitely a desert person. I have come to realize I love the mountains too. I love the ocean, but like the desert just speaks to me. And maybe it is something about just being able to like, you know, if you find the right place, just being able to look out and see like no humans, no development, just endless beautiful vistas. I also love sand and dry air, so I don't know. But yeah, I hear that.
So what brought you to writing about the outdoors?
Well, I've always been a writer and I thrive on variety. So I write about a lot of different things. I certainly didn't begin writing about the outdoors. When I moved to Colorado, I didn't ski, didn't bike, didn't climb, didn't do any of the things, and was sort of perplexed by the outdoor lifestyle. It took me a while to get the hang of it. So originally I was more using my writing skills for climate change, writing about the environment for nonprofits, freelance stories. Then I was a food writer for a while, felt very guilty about being so hedonistic with environmental problems out there to solve. So I went back to grad school for environmental humanities and spent 2 years like in the thick of that. And then I shifted into the outdoor industry from there. And I think some of that was part of where I am. Like there's a lot of outdoor brands based in Utah, and outdoor brands tend to have some kind of environmental ethic because they're obviously rooted in outdoor spaces that need to be protected. And so that connection kind of worked for me. I don't know, you know, from there I began freelancing more about outdoors and then started writing these travel guides as well.
And so does your other writing, so are you still writing kind of more from an environmental perspective as well? Do you have those other kind of like, it sounds like you have a lot of arms of kind of like where you take your writing or where you took it. Are those all still active, or are you primarily just focusing in on outdoors and kind of this, you know, the outdoor industry and environment from there?
Yeah, it shifts. And I feel like, you know, all my past writing experiences inform whatever I'm writing at the moment. So I'm always trying to have a bit of an environmental agenda with anything I write. Like if I can call out Leave No Trace or like a nonprofit that's protecting our public lands, then I try to do that, particularly with the moon guides. Like anywhere there was an opportunity to subtly provide that message of like, don't step on the cryptobiotic soil and pack out your trash, like simple things. But I can't say that I'm like focused on environmental storytelling anymore. even though that saddens me a little bit. I do work full-time at this outdoor brand called Cotopaxi, which is like on a big mission to preserve the planet for all people.
You said the magic words.
Oh, is that the magic?
I just want to let you know, Maya, because Dusty is, not that Cotopaxi is a sponsor, but they might as well be for Dusty's life.
They might as well be. I noticed immediately you were wearing the jacket.
Yeah.
And I have a jacket and a fleece and a rain jacket.
Ooh,
and
nice.
Oh, I love them. I love them so. Aww. Oh, and I have the, I'm really obsessed with the fanny pack.
Nice.
Love that
you have
too.
The kapai, the colorful one.
Yes, that's the one.
Cool.
The one. I saw it and was like, Mom, I have to have this. So we were in the REI in Seattle, and they had a bunch of them. And I just was like, yeah, I can't. It was like a pet. Like I have to bring this home. me today.
So
I know.
Cute.
No, I love it because I love their mission. And you're right. Like outdoor brands, I appreciate the ones who are super forward and transparent about their advocacy work when it comes to the environment and climate.
Yeah. I mean, none of them are perfect, but my favorite part of my job is writing about impact or if there's some environmental story to tell behind a product.
I love that. And I feel like you're not the only moon travel author who does that. There are a lot of, there are other moon travel authors we know of from like reading the books who definitely work in the advocacy angle in all of their writing. I mean, Moon Travel Guides is an industry leader in ethical travel. And so like, I feel like all of that tracks, all of your advocacy work being in your writing, because I'm sorry, y'all, there's no way to recreate without doing it responsibly and in an informed way. And so I think it's great that we can go to your book and be able to take away from it not only things we should do, but good practices on how to do those things too.
And that's something we talk about consistently throughout the show, you know, not just in interviews with other people, but just talking about how to kind of create spaces that are for everybody, how to keep those spaces pristine for everybody. And, you know, what we need to do as individuals, as groups of people, as organizations to make that happen. So I think that, you know, having that, again, incorporating that into your writing is so important. And I think it's things that people just take for granted. I mean, you take a look at the environmental movement, and I feel like everybody just sort of took for granted that, you know, oh, we can't just throw litter everywhere. Oh, we actually have to, like, you know, throw things out in a respectful and responsible way. And so it takes that sort of important writing to make people more aware of it. And so if they're able to get that from a book, whether it's a travel book or whether it's a, you know, a nonfiction, I think either is so important. But it's wonderful that it's here, especially for people that are picking things up and are like, oh, I want to go to this place. Like, what do I need to know? And how can I do it in a way that is going to continue to make that space usable, enjoyable, pleasurable for anybody else that goes there? So that's super important.
Totally. Like, especially in places that are over-touristed, which the Utah National Parks most certainly are. Happy to talk about ways to avoid the tourists or the crowds, you know, like, but yeah, it can be a problem. And so it's really important. And then the other thing is going beyond like the environmental ethics of how you travel to respecting the people that came before you in that place. You know, like Utah has a lot of indigenous cultures and they're often overwritten by the settler narrative here in Utah and not acknowledged. And like even in the signage, you'll see not necessarily national parks, but just traveling through Utah. So yeah, there's a lot of nuance to responsible travel these days.
Speaking of over-touristed, shall we talk about Zion? We've been to Zion. We loved Zion. Zion was our very first national park that we ever went to together as very special spot. That
what year? Curious.
It was in 2017.
Okay.
I feel like we hit it and hit a lot of the parks that have now become, where ticketing and reservation systems are now in place. I feel like we have hit them in a pocket right before all of that happened and right before everything sort of exploded as far as like travel to those spaces go. Because Zion was busy, but I felt like when we were there, it was pretty manageable and there wasn't ticketing in place there. We were there in the spring, same thing for Bryce, you know, it was the same trip. We did all of the Utah parks in that trip except for Capitol Reef, which I cannot wait to talk to you about. But I felt like we hit it in a very manageable sort of way. Like, and I didn't feel like it was overcrowded. But now I feel like I'd love to get back, but I just feel like crowds are very present no matter when.
When we were in Zion, we got there, and then the first evening we hiked Hidden Canyon Trail. Then the next morning we got up. We were staying like an hour away.
We were in Hurricane. We were about 30 minutes, I'm pretty sure.
Hurricane, there we go. And we got on that very first tram to bring us out to Angel's Landing before there was any ticketing for Angel's Landing or permits or registration needed. It was just, if you want to get on the chains, go get on the chains, y'all, right? We did Angel's Landing followed by, oh, that was a long day. We did Angel's Landing. We did the upper and lower Emerald Pools. Then we did Watchmen, and then we also did, there was a couple other ones. And
Prehistoric Trail, maybe?
Yeah.
I feel like it was right by the Visitor
Center. A few other smaller trails, and we did all of that. And that was our time in Zion. But I'm curious, what's your advice to the listener on, like, how do we do Zion in a way that, like, isn't totally over-touristed and in a way that, like, we would enjoy and get to see all the things that Zion has to offer?
Yeah, would love to talk about that. So I will admit I've never done Angel's Landing because when I went, I couldn't get a permit. So yeah, that's on my list. But I can tell you about some other ways to get a sense of the park without feeling like you're in Disney World, which is what it feels like when you're at the shuttle stops or at the popular trailheads. And I was there most recently, I think it was May. So kind of getting into a more peak season time frame than earlier in spring. But my best tip for Zion is to bike, because the whole road now, the scenic drive, is closed to private cars unless you're staying at the historic lodge during peak season, which changes every year. They change the dates exactly, but it's like March through early November or late October. So there's just the shuttle buses, right? You have to board the bus unless you're on a bike, which is amazing because I personally am like a little terrified of biking on the shoulder of a national park scenic drive because people are like looking at maps and they're not from here necessarily and they're not paying attention. So that's scary to me. But when there's just the shuttle bus, they wait for you to pull over. They like stop. And then you pull over to the side of the road and the shuttle bus passes and then you have the road to yourself again. And you can be on that scenic drive and feel like there is nobody else in the park while you're biking. It's also flat. It's like a pretty easy ride. I can't remember off the top of my head round trip. I feel like it's 11, 12 miles round trip to get to the Riverside Walk, to the Narrows, and then back. There's like bike stands at every shuttle stop where you can lock your bike up to hike. It's great. Can't recommend it enough. In Springdale, you can rent like an e-bike. So if you don't want to work hard, you just want to like go quickly to the trailhead. You could do e-bike style or bring your own bike.
What a great tip.
A few others. If you go past the first mile of a lot of trails, that's a great way to lose people, especially on the Narrows. If you get the right gear, any trail anywhere in Utah, like my backyard or the desert, people just start to, you know, thin out. So yeah, if you come with the right gear to do the Narrows, it's so crowded and off-putting at the mouth of the canyon, and then you keep going and everybody goes away. I did the Narrows when I was 9 years old, so my memories of it are a bit hazy, but I remember there being nobody there. That was, of course, a long time ago, before the Mighty Five campaign and whatnot. A couple other ideas are to hit Colo Canyons. Obviously, it's a different landscape. It's non-contiguous to the main canyon, but it's gorgeous there. There's arches and alcoves. There's backpacking trails. Stargazing at night. There's like no light pollution. It's really easy to hit it too if you're driving south on 15 to get to Zion to stop at Colo Canyons. Colo Terrace Road is also a great spot to do some hiking in the Zion areas within the National Park boundaries, and some canyoneering if you're into that or you want to get a guide without having to deal with the traffic and the crowds.
I feel like we experienced a lot of that second day on foot. So we kind of moved through. We did Riverwalk. Now I'm thinking about everything else we did. We did Weeping Rock.
Yeah. Which is now closed for Rockfall.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And I know that Hidden Canyon is also, you can't get into the canyon too. So
I thought it reopened. Right? But I believe
did it reopen?
It reopened.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know that I had heard that it had closed, but yeah, we did a ton that day, and we did most of it on foot. Like, we took that tram out, and then we just kind of like were like, what trails can we hit along the way? And I love the fact that it is. We also came to doing national parks from doing like marathon walks in like New York City, like literally a full marathon, like just walking. So we were kind of like, again, first park, we're like, oh yeah, we'll do these these hikes, we'll get some elevation and then we'll just walk. And I thought that was also a great way to be able to experience the park, because it is, from what I remember, the main portion of the park is pretty manageable, like, as a park goes. Like, not the backcountry sections, but, like, once you're in, like, I would imagine biking is wonderful. And that sounds like such a wonderful experience to be able to, like, wow, I'm on the road by myself. Are there other people biking? Like, what a great way to, like, experience the park and not have to worry about, because I feel like so many times when you drive into a park, you're, like, gawking at scenery, and also operating a motor vehicle, not always the best. So, like, being on a bike, like, there's that time where it's like, oh, I can just quickly stop right here in the middle of the road. No one's behind me. Like, I can look up at, like, the wall of the canyon. Like, that's incredible. So what a great suggestion. And Springdale is so close that it's so easy to be able to access that, you know, and then get right into the park.
Yeah, you can literally bike from, like, the bike rental shop in Springdale.
That's so cool. That day in Zion, we literally, yeah, we took that tram out, did Angel's Landing, and then on foot all the way back to the visitor center.
Whoa. Just like on the side of the, does Pyrus Trail go all the way?
A lot of it did. I remember that. And then because we did the stopover in the, there was that small museum.
The Human History Museum.
We did stop in there.
I think we got on the tram there and then came back a little bit, but we did a lot of it on foot.
And then immediately to the brewery.
It's the best place to go after a desert day.
I mean, Zion, there's so much to talk about. The Narrows is something we haven't done. We would love to get back to do. When we were there, I think it wasn't open completely, right? I think the water temperature was too cold. The river was too high. Something had happened. So that's obviously something, if you're going to visit and that's something you're planning on doing, obviously something to check in and, like, really make sure that you have a plan for it. Because you want to be able, if that's what you want to be able to do, it's a very particular type of hike. And like you said, needing the right gear or having the right gear is really important for that.
Yeah, planning ahead is pretty key, whether it's like permitting or making sure your trail's open. Yeah.
Let's transition to Bryce Canyon, which was such a surprise. We've described Bryce Canyon as like a Mars-like alien world so many times. That very next day after doing that long hiking day in Zion, we got up incredibly early. I think it was like 4 a.m. or something, and we drove to Bryce Canyon, and then we did the entire Peekaboo Loop in Bryce Canyon.
And hiked up to Bryce Point and back down too.
You would think we would learn when it comes to, like, taking breaks, but still, yeah. Like, we hiked last or 2 weeks ago, essentially, down in the Southwest. And yeah, no, we made it back to back to back to back every single day.
Is it because you don't have enough time to spend at the park, or you just, like pack days?
We're definitely trying to maximize, certainly. But we are also, like, for example, over the summer, we went to Olympic and Mount Rainier, and Olympic, both of those are incredible parks with so much hiking, and we did a ton of hiking in Olympic, like back to back to back for like four days or something like that. Then we went to Mount Rainier. We actually met Becky there, and we did like a bunch of hikes back to back. And then we were like, and we're going to go to Seattle and chill for a couple of days before we fly back. But of course, what did we do in Seattle? Got on foot, and all we did in Seattle was walk. And like, I think the first day we did like 13 or 14 miles in Seattle that day. And then the same the next day. We were like, why don't we just
sit? You clearly love it. You're addicted to walking.
Okay, so same question. What kind of like insight can you give the listener about going to Bryce Canyon now? Best ways to do it, best things to do to sort of like get the most that you can out of a trip there?
I think it depends on your priorities and how much you like walking. because for some people, Bryce is one of those places where like you get to one of the points and it just blows you away. And so if you've got a bunch going on in Southern Utah and you really just want to see the hoodoos, you don't necessarily need to hike like 12 miles, right? And like work really hard to avoid crowds. Like just deal with the crowds and like take it in because it'll still blow you away. So if that's your goal, fine. If you want a different hoodoo experience with less people and chaos, there's a couple ways to do that. One is there's a back entrance into Bryce. I'm always a little hesitant to give this away, but Probably most people won't want to do it. And it's from the town of Tropic, which is one of the like gateway towns to Bryce. So you keep going like past the entrance, the turn off to like Bryce Canyon City, that like really commercialized Bryce area. You go into town of Tropic and you like take this, you can put in Tropic Trailhead in Google Maps and it'll come up, but you just basically like end up on a cul-de-sac in a residential neighborhood. And it's like Bryce Canyon this way, 2.5 miles. You do have to hike like 2.5 miles. The first mile is not very interesting. It's just like double track, dusty. You're like kind of in a forest. And then all of a sudden you start to see the hoodoos and there's like nobody around because it's just kind of cool to approach the amphitheater that way from within. And you also don't have to pay the park fee, even though definitely advocate for paying park fees, but you don't necessarily have to. And then you can just connect with Peekaboo Loop and you can, you know, head up Queen's Garden or Navajo Loop to get up to the rim and then head back the way you came. And parking obviously is super mellow. You're like in a neighborhood and it's just a different way to get in the amphitheater.
For folks like us who love walking, then that would be a really ideal thing to do. We're putting a pin in that because we're going to do that next time we go to Bryce. That sounds great.
And then you're right by the town of Tropic, which has the best food in the area versus like Bryce, not the best food. So you can just go out to dinner, get beers.
Great.
I think something that we have always put into practice, and it's something we say all the time, is hike early and hike often. So we got to Bryce and there was no one there. Like we pulled in and there was maybe like two or three other cars at Sunrise Point and we're like, oh, okay. And then by the time we had gone down Navajo Loop, gone up to Bryce Point, it was crowded there, more crowded. And then by the time we came back and went up Queen's Garden, it was like, that's where it was a zoo. But it was later in the afternoon at that point. So my curiosity is, because we always seem to miss it, is stargazing. And I feel like Bryce is a good park for that. Am I correct about that?
Bryce is beautiful for stargazing, especially like, even if it's a full moon, you're not going to see as many stars, but just the moonlight over the hoodoos is really magical. There's also Dark Sky Rangers is based just outside of Bryce. It's like a 20-minute drive from the park and they're an observatory and they do like guided stargazing, not right within the park, but right outside the boundaries. So I would highly recommend that as well.
I think the thing that always was fascinating to the both of us about Bryce, especially being on the Peekaboo Trail, is every turn is just something different and magical. And you could never have like been at that turn and then described what was going to be next, because it just, everything shifted the entire time. So I think that's one of the biggest, I mean, obviously seeing the you know, amphitheater, the Canyon Amphitheater from the rim is mind-bogglingly beautiful. But getting in there, I feel like what you were saying about past the first mile, people kind of like don't, you know, won't go any further. I feel like when we were on the Peekaboo Trail, there was no one with us. Like, we were really feel like we saw barely anybody. It was at Navajo Loop and Queen's Garden. Like, those were the spots where everybody was. Because, again, it was just that like first little bit of the trail. And then once we got past that, it was just smooth sailing for us for the rest of the time.
Well, I do have to say, like, I think for me, Bryce Canyon gets, if we're giving superlatives, like high school superlatives, best park for surprises goes to Bryce Canyon National Park. Would you agree?
I love that. Yeah, it's shocking.
Literally every turn is just full of something unbelievable that you could never imagine.
It's kind of nice too to do like every trail there twice, because I couldn't put my phone away. Like I would put it away and be like, okay, I'm going to be in the moment now. And then you're like, wait, I got to take a picture of this. Like, this is such a crazy rock formation. So yeah, it's hard to put your phone or camera down.
As the leaves begin to change and we leave the heat of summer behind, it's time to plot some new adventures in some new places.
Maybe it's time to visit a national park like Glacier, Yellowstone, or Grand Teton before the parks become snowbound.
Or maybe it's a great time to take a road trip through New England or along historic Route 66.
Or maybe it's finally time to dust off your passport and head abroad to Europe, South America, Asia, and beyond.
With so many options of where to go, it's good to know that there's one place you can always turn to.
From hikes to hotels to the best spots to eat, Moon Travel has you covered.
From excellent firsthand experience from authors who are local to the areas they're writing about, to wonderful maps and great recommendations, Moon Travel Guides give the reader so much more than other travel guides on the market.
That's right, and we are so excited that this year we are again partnering with Moon Travel.
Through this partnership, through the end of 2024, our listeners can get 20% off any Moon Travel Guide when they use the code GAZE24 at checkout.
That's code GAZE24, GAZE24, for 20% off any Moon Travel Guide in Moon's entire library. Head to our show notes to check it out and see Moon's entire collection of guidebooks.
So ready to cross something off your travel bucket list in 2024?
Have lots of great ideas for trips, but don't know how to get started or keep your itinerary organized?
Wherever your wanderings may take you or inspire you to go, Moon Travel Guides have you covered.
Head to moon.com and use code GAZE24 at checkout to open up the world of possibilities for your next trip.
Moon Travel. Let your heart be your compass. Let Moon be your guide.
Hey y'all, it's Dusty and Mike with exciting news.
That's right, it's our episode finder. It's all about making finding our episodes even easier.
Want to find more episodes about hikes in Shenandoah? With over 10 episodes across two separate seasons, it would have involved a lot of scrolling and searching.
Now, with our episode finder, you can find all those episodes with a few easy clicks. That way, finding an episode on Yosemite from season 1 is just as easy as finding an episode on Zion, Yellowstone, and Haleakala, all in separate seasons.
With over 275 episodes in 35 different national parks, our episode finder will add ease when finding out more about hikes in these spaces.
But it's not just about hikes by national park. We've categorized our entire library so you can find hikes by state, hikes by terrain, and hikes by difficulty.
And all of our Trail Mix episodes are there too, so you can easily find our science-based episodes, interviews, and more.
Planning a trip to Colorado and want to hear more about our adventures there? Want to grunt it out on some really tricky trails or learn more about glaciers, grasslands, and mountains?
Just click the link in our show notes or on our Instagram bio, and it pops right up. You can also head directly to our website and look for the episode finder at the top of the navigation bar.
Conquer one hike in one national park, one park at a time, with just a few clicks with our episode finder. Happy trails!
Obviously, the book, you know, is primarily focused Zion Bryce, but you have other things in the book, specifically the Moab area parks. That's something that, again, when we think about the parks, ticketing specifically with arches and getting in, like entrance timing and everything like that, is pivotal because, and we talked a little bit about this recently, because you're going up on a mesa, it's like a one-way road. Like, that's the only way in, only way out. It's such an incredible space to go. I feel a little bit, and I think you would probably agree, Dusty, we only had time for Islands in the Sky when we were in Canyonlands. So it's also, we need to get back. One thing I want to share, I do want to talk about, obviously, Moab and all of that wild, crazy landscape that's there and the wild and craziness that is Moab. But the thing that's craziest to me is that when we planned that first trip, which was really all of the Utah parks, plus we did Grand Canyon, we ended up being able to throw in Painted Desert into that trip as well. The one thing that we consistently read was, if you don't have time, you should skip Canyonlands, or you should skip Capitol Reef.
Skip Painted Desert.
Skip Capitol Reef.
Yes. Oh, Capitol Reef.
Skip Capitol Reef. You don't need to go to Capitol Reef.
Now, yeah. We would like clarify, we did not read that in a Moon Travel Guide. So,
no.
We did not read that in a Moon Travel Guide. But, you know, at the time, we were, like, scouring the internet. We were, like, you know, looking at maps. We were looking at things. And, yeah, everything said, if you have to skip one, you can skip Capitol Reef. And then we got to Capitol Reef.
Very much disagree. Yeah.
And we were like, are you kidding me? This is the greatest place we've ever seen. Like, Capitol Reef is immediately in my top 5 parks. And I'm like, what? Like, we ended up hiking with another hiker. She was there, like, in her RV, and we ended up on the trail at the same time. We were like, this is such an incredible park. Like, why do all of the guidebooks say you can skip it? And she goes, oh, that's because we all write the guidebooks, and so we want to keep the secret.
Yeah. I mean, she's not wrong. It's always a tie for me what my favorite park is between Bryce and Capitol Reef. I'm always going back and forth.
It's so hard.
Yeah.
That's a hard battle to fight, I'd imagine.
We did a lot of Capitol Reef in one day. We did Cassidy Arch, then we hiked the Frying Pan over to the other side, and then we like went to the road, and then we came back through the wash to make it a loop, and then later in the day we went back and we hiked Chimney Rock.
Oh, cool.
So same question. What advice do you have for the listener to who's going to Capitol Reef for the first time maybe and wants to get the Capitol Reef experience?
Yeah, I mean, Cassidy Arch is such a classic, awesome trail. When I was there, some guy was like rappelling down the middle of it, which was also fun to watch. I was also carrying my 5-year-old at the time on my back for most of that trail, so a little bit tainted by that experience. I was like worrying I was going to fall off the edge of the trail. But Capitol Reef, you don't have to work as hard to avoid crowds, which is nice, because in the role of like hiking past the first mile for sure applies there, like even more than in like Zion, where you have these bucket list hikes like Angel's Landing, where you can't really escape all the people. I just love like Capitol Gorge, like just like wandering up that gorge is so amazing. Like it's, you don't even feel like you're on a trail. There's like little offshoots you can explore. You can scramble, you can like chill under a ledge and have lunch. Like it's just such a nice experience. I have not personally done this, but my goal is to drive the Notam Bullfrog Road, which is off of Highway 24, to drive over the Water Pocket Fold. That's like the feature that defines the park. It's like this geologic wrinkle in time. It connects with a lot of other really cool backcountry roads and takes you to the town of Boulder. Ultimately, you can connect to Burr Trail, which is another road to get to Boulder. And that's like kind of the heart of Grand Staircase. Not the heart, but like a gateway town to Grand Staircase Escalante. So that's kind of a cool way to like get a sense of the whole area, is like a lot of these like backcountry scenic drives, especially in Capitol Reef, are a really good way to get off the beaten path. Another thing, I mean, Capitol Reef is so unique with its orchards. Like, it's such a weird thing. But I kind of just, like, love being in this, like, little mini oasis. You can get the pies and buy do the pick 'em fruit if you're there at the right time of year, early fall, which is really nice. The little schoolhouse is really cool to see. Like, there's just some kind of cool cultural experiences. I would say to skip the Highway 24 petroglyphs. They're kind of, like, very developed, and that there's like a walkway and a fence, and like then you get there and you're like, you can't really see, you're like, where is it? It's kind of like a meh experience compared to some of the other petroglyphs in Utah. But yeah, love Capitol Reef.
Yeah, definitely a park to also hit again and get back to, because it was just a magical experience. Heading further east, Moab is sort of like, you know, Moab is such a giant space, not only because of both national parks, but for the outdoor industry in general. Like, it feels like that's sort of like, would you say that that's kind of like outdoor industry epicenter for Utah? Like, or at least like a big launching off point for so much?
Yeah, I feel like for much of the West, it's like an adventure HQ. I mean, there's just so much tourism there. There's people coming from all over the world to mountain bike, do the ATV thing, which I don't really do. And it's always crowded now. You can't go to Moab and be like, oh, I'm going in the off season, it's going to be so chill. No. I was there when I was like, I don't know, 11 or 12 maybe. And I like came back in my 20s expecting it to be like this quaint little adventure town. Like, oh no, no. I mean, it's fun. It's very convenient. It's a great place to stay if you want like a luxury accommodation, but then be able to like get out to the parks. Like, that's kind of the best option.
Yeah, I mean, it is nice that it's, like, literally at the doorstep of both, you know, Canyonlands and Arches. That was something that was, like, hilarious to us, that it was like, oh, well, Arches is on the right side of the street, and then, like, Canyonlands is just a little further up the road to the left. Like, it's kind of like that sort of, like, weird epicenter of, like, Yosemite, Kings Canyon, and Sequoia, where they're all so close to one another, and it's, but I feel like nothing is as close as those two.
Yeah.
Like, when you think about big parks, Arches is an experience, I feel like, you can do Arches pretty much in a day. Like, if you're not backcountry, doing any backcountry, like, it's a very accessible park. You're able to do much of that. What do you recommend, like, when it comes to Canyonlands? Because obviously you've got Islands in the Sky, you've got Needles, and you have the Rapidian section, correct? Those are the three parts of the park?
You have the Maze, which is, like, a very backcountry section. What did you say, Rapidian?
Yeah, like the water area of the park.
Got
yeah.
it.
The riparian.
Yeah.
Yeah, I
always
say
I haven't heard about that part.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got people just, I think, generally call it like the rivers, like the Green in Colorado. And then you also have the Horseshoe Canyon unit, which is like pretty far from Canyonlands, but really cool destination for petroglyphs.
What do you recommend? Because like, I know I remember driving from Canyonlands and I think we saw the turnoff for the Needles. And it was like, if you're going to the Needles, you have to be prepared because it's like, you drive in, like, how far is that drive in off the highway? It's pretty lengthy, right?
Yeah, I did do it in one day. I did Fiery Furnace and the Arches, and then drove to the Needles because that's how my book trips are. They're like, kind of, it sounds like your trips. It's like, how much can I possibly fit into one day? I'm just going to do it. But I think it was about 2.5 to 3 hours from Arches to Needles. So probably pretty similar from Island in the Sky, maybe a tad further. I wouldn't recommend trying to do Island in the Sky and Needles in one day. I would stay in Moab or in that Moab area and do like one day, one the other day.
Yeah. And that was pretty much the recommendation we had gotten to. It's like, you can't, you got to come back if you want to do more. Like Canyonlands is so big. Like, I think that's
so
the
vast
thing that
yeah.
when you're like, oh wow, I can do Arches in a day. Canyonlands, great. Me, that'll be great too. And it's like, no. No, you have no idea how big Canyonlands is.
Yeah, it's massive.
Another question I have, kind of as we've talked about like the main units and things that a lot of people know about. We have had episodes in our on our show about all of the, you know, the big five in Utah, the Golden Circle, as it were. What are the things that you recommend that people should see if they have more time beyond the parks that might be near each of those spaces? You mentioned a little bit throughout the interview that might be just as interesting or maybe a great supplement to someone who's maybe seen Zion before is going back and seeing a little bit more of it, but wants something that's close by that would be a great add-on.
So for Zion, another great nearby destination is Snow Canyon State Park outside of St. George. Really beautiful red rock, like caves and I don't know if there's an arch in Snow Canyon, but great hiking, a little bit of climbing as well. In the Bryce area, Red Canyon, which is in the Dixie National Forest, very unfortunately named Dixie National Forest. Red Canyon is beautiful. There are hoodoos there. There's this amazing trail called Thunder Mountain Trail, which is popular for horseback riding and mountain biking, but you can also hike it. I mountain biked it and it was amazing. I did it before the day before Bryce. And so I was like, feel like I already had my hoodoo fill a little bit. And it connects with this awesome rec path, so it's easy to make a loop out of it. And then, let's see, you also have like Duck Creek area near Bryce, which is more alpine. But near there, you can go to Cedar Breaks National Monument, which also has a hoodoo landscape and is much less trafficked. I will say you can't visit Cedar Breaks from like November through Memorial Day, more or less, because of snow, because it's much higher in elevation. For the Arches area, I think there are ways that you can, there's a back entrance into Arches as well, but you have to have four-wheel drive and like clearance. But off of Klondike Bluffs Road, you can take the back way into the park and you can hike to Tower Arch. So that's still within the park, but there are way fewer people, like much more mellow Arches experience if you have the right vehicle and want to do that. There's also Natural Bridges National Monument. They're not arches, they're bridges, but they look like arches. So I went there recently and was like blown away. It's the first national monument in Utah to be established. And there's like 3 to 5 natural bridges that are like the main attraction. But very few people, like I hiked down to this bridge and there was nobody there to the point where it almost creeped me out because I was like, could hear like a leaf rustle in the background. Like it was just crazy being that close to an arch and having no other humans. And like human sounds. Capitol Reef, you don't really need like, I mean, Grand Staircase is right by Capitol Reef, so highly recommend weaving that into your trip, even if it's just a couple hikes like Lower Calf Creek Falls or driving over Hell's Backbone. And Canyonlands, Dead Horse Point State Park is nearby as well. I haven't been there, but it's supposed to be amazing and have good mountain biking as well. And even just, I actually within Moab, I'm trying to remember the name of the canyon, Cane Creek Canyon in Moab. I wouldn't say it's not crowded. There's tons of people like mountain biking and rock climbing and running in that canyon, but it's free to access and it's easier to kind of get a little off the beaten path in Moab. So it's endless. Like there's so much BLM land in Utah. It's insane. So very easy to tack on like additional adventures to complement your national park visit. I will also put in a quick plug. It's further away, but Bears Ears is so amazing. It's huge. It's like 2 million acres. Really good if you enjoy like navigation a bit. It's like takes more wayfinding. There's not signs everywhere, you know, but there's gorgeous hiking. There's like, you'll just be hiking and see some random cave dwelling off in the distance or like a petroglyph that's like not even in a book or you weren't expecting it, you know, and there's like nobody around. It's just such a cool experience to go there, as well as Monument Valley. If you're a Western fan, highly recommend adding that. It is like you'll Google map it from Moab and be like, oh, I can't drive that much further south, but it's so worth it. It's so cool. And so if you can like do it on your way to the Grand Canyon or just tack on another day to your trip, those are really cool experiences as well.
Yeah, I understand why you live in Utah and how you haven't done everything yet, because Utah has, like, it's just wild. Like, again, and that's where I just feel like if I had to pick a state, granted, I haven't been to Alaska yet, but if I had to pick a state where the parks are just, like, the wow factor is there and the just impressive nature of the landscape is there, 1,000% it's Utah. Like, 1,000% the landscape, winner. The hiking, everything, the adventuring. Like, winner. So...
winner. I mean, we would always say on all of our Utah episodes, we're like, the new slogan for Utah is Utah, who knew?
Oh, that's hilarious.
There's so... much so to much. See.
Yeah, you're like, yeah. Oh, I've heard of Zion, but you're like, there's like millions of more acres. You will never see it. Even if you dedicated your whole life and quit your job and just wandered around, you wouldn't see all of it.
Wild.
It's crazy.
It was really funny. Like, before we started traveling together, Mike had been to 2 national parks. And then I was like, yeah, I haven't been to any national parks. Psych. I totally, as a kid, had gone to 2.
Just forgot.
One of them was Great Smokies. I grew up in Mississippi. Gatlinburg, Pigeon Forge isn't that far. So we ended up there a lot. And then on a trip to Las Vegas, they were like, oh yeah, we're doing a hiking day. And we were in Zion. And I was like, we got to Zion and I was like, have I been here before? This is so wild.
Oh my God.
And then when I found the pictures and I looked back at them, I was like, no, this was a totally different section of Zion. I don't know what section we went to, but it wasn't the section that that the two of us had gone to. So I still don't know what section that is. I know it was another entrance.
You don't think it was Colo Canyons or East Zion?
It might have been East Zion because it wasn't the Narrows. It was not Springdale. It was definitely, I feel like, on the other. So East Zion, I think we drove all the way around it. And then I need to look at photos of that, too.
I did a similar thing with childhood memories where I was so sure I had been to Bryce, maybe because I'd seen so many photos of it. And I, like, took a picture of the lodge and texted it to my dad. I'm like, do you remember when we stayed in the lodge on our trip? And he was like, we never went there. I'm like, what? I, like, just conflated all my national park trips as a child.
Oh, my gosh. That's great. So you just Mandela affected your trip to Bryce Canyon.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I love that.
Exactly.
I love that.
Well, this has been very, very lovely and so great to chat about everything Utah, and you are totally a wellspring of information, and I know you're also like, there's things that I can't wait to see, so it's awesome to like hear that too, where it's like, I am like well versed in so much of Utah, but there's so much here that it's like, as you just said, like you could quit your job and like wander forever and like never see it all. So that's so cool to like also just have that sense of curiosity and discovery to still just like continue to drive you, because you're never going to run out of landscape out there.
Totally. Yeah, that's awesome. Well, let me know if you guys make it back out here. I'll send you all the tips. And I just want to say my Moon Utah guide to the whole state is coming out in September. And that will include Bears Ears. So the Moon Zion Bryce guide includes a lot of public lands that are not parks, despite the title saying Zion and Bryce. But the Moon Utah book is the first one that will include Bears Ears. So that's a new addition very excited about that.
Well, thank you so much, Maya. This was such a joy getting to know you and hearing about all of your work and your time in these parks that we also love too.
Yeah, this is fun.
Looking for more episodes like the one you just heard? Then be sure to check out our episode finder for episodes by park, state, hiking difficulty, and terrain, as well as all of our Trail Mix episodes in one helpful place. Click the link in the show notes of this episode, our Instagram bio, or visit our website to make your listening experience even easier.
This has been Gaze at the National Parks, the podcast, and we're here to remind you to hike early and hike often, and that adventure is always out there.
Gaze at the National Parks was created, produced, edited, and hosted by us,
Dustin Ballard
and Michael Ryan.
To see images from this episode, follow our Instagram at Gaze at the National Parks. To contact us, email us at gazeatthenationalparks@gmail.com. And to find out more about the parks visited on this show, visit our website, gazeatthenationalparks.com. That's Gaze, G-A-Z-E.
All original artwork featured on Instagram and on our website is by me, Michael Ryan.
All original music was written and performed by Dave Seaman and Mariella Klinger, with Sean Scalios on guitar. Our music producer is Skylar Fortgang.
We would also like to acknowledge that while recording this episode, that we were on the traditional and stolen lands of the Lenape people, also known as New Jersey.